Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Friday, 24 December. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. This is our last show for 2021. We'll be back on the 10th of Jan, and we recorded this back last Tuesday on the 14th, chatting with Alex Dace from Thimble Wealth to getting his sense of 2021, what he's looking for next year, and then Mohammed Nala from Onos.com, looking at supply chain crises of 2021.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Alex Dace, Chief Investment Officer at Thimble Wealth. Alex, appreciate the time today. Appreciate the time over the course of the year. 2021 has, by and large, been a really good year for investors on the market. Some stellar returns coming through. For you, what was one of the standouts from the year?
Yes, certainly it's been a good year for equities. Ever since quite COVID, quite frankly, it's been very strong equity markets, local as well as offshore. One of the biggest success stories for us is the end of last year, we started buying into PPC, and PPC has been a incredible success story this year, mostly due to restructuring of the balance sheet. So it did come with a bit of a degree of risk because, you know, there was a chance that, you know, the DRC issues had to be absorbed by the South African balance sheet. But luckily, we were able to resolve that, and I think the stock is up about 400 or 500% since we bought it. So certainly, that's been by far our biggest success story. In the large cap space, if you think about a couple of success stories, the MTN certainly stood out for us as well. Another type of company which had balance sheet issues and were able to deleverage it. And quite a few things started to fall in place for the MTN now, finally, after a number of years of disappointment. So, you know, and the other success stories, I guess you can say, is in the banking space. We certainly thought the banks looked too cheap for us after COVID, and they've done quite well for us. And we still think there's an opportunity going forward as well in the big four banks. So certainly there's been quite a few of those. Obviously some bad ones as well, but mostly it's been a good year for us. So no complaints from our side.
Yeah, it has been a good year. I mean, you mentioned PPC. Was that really just on – I mean, I remember having a good hard look at it, probably sub one rand. And it was, as you mentioned, high risk. There was, you know, potential of rights issues because of the DRC and the like. Was it more on that recovery or because that really is what driven it. Now it's at a point where, well, can it start, you know, performing as a business and seeing infrastructure spend and the like?
It was certainly mostly initially our investment thesis was about the restructuring. So we attended a management meeting end of last year, and we walked away very constructive of that meeting. We obviously were cognizant of the risks, but we just felt like this management team are able to pull a rabbit out of the hat. Mm-hmm. And also that we're talking a little bit about improvements operation as well in the business and so forth, but predominantly it was the debt. Since then, obviously the share has related a lot, and it's not more about the debt issues at all. I mean, the rights issue has been averted. Yeah. Now it's about infrastructure spending, which is anticipated to pick up in South Africa, specifically for the coming year. And cement sales continue to increase, and obviously competitors struggling a little bit. So the investment thesis has changed. That's why going forward, you're not going to see the same type of returns. But we still think at these levels, MTN is still relatively attractive, PPC is still relatively attractive if the infrastructure spending does come through and no new curveballs thrown towards management.
Yeah, and we're seeing, I mean, I don't know if you get sight of the AFRIMAT construction index, and it is ticking a little bit higher, and we've certainly seen, I mean, Robex has had a really good period. Marion Roberts, so that they're not doing much in South Africa. It's a much smaller space than it used to be, the infrastructure / construction. But if we can get that spending right, there certainly could be winners there.
Certainly. And there's also a lot of skills in the country when it comes to the construction space. So a lot of these employees wasn't been busy over the last few years or perhaps have left the country and have come back. And so their skills certainly to execute some of these projects as well. And certainly just from a private sector, expenditure has been okay, but the public sector spending has collapsed. Yeah. And any form of recovery from that perspective will be a nice boost to demand. And as a result, you should see the cement factories producing close to peak utility capacity, and as a result, that will improve margins, which is so critical in an environment where people are cost conscious and price sensitive.
Yeah, and we saw margins improve in the last set of PPC results, notwithstanding cost pressure increases coming that they couldn't always pass on, but that increased capacity. You mentioned banks there, and I was chatting with Koeman a week before last around the banking space. Is there still opportunity there? I mean, they've had a decent enough year. They've certainly come through the crisis solid and well intact. Are there opportunities in the banking space for 2022?
We certainly believe so, Simon. So we think specifically Standard Bank and Nedbank looks for us quite attractive from a valuation perspective. They're most likely 20 to 30% undervalued in our views, with good dividend growth as well. And you should see some good earnings growth momentum. Yes, it's coming from a low base, but the valuations are also quite low. So we certainly think they're quite attractive. The banks are very well managed. They're well provided for any potential bad debts. We're not coming through a cycle where we had a lot of bad debt, so the books are relatively strong or clean. So we think the banks are well positioned. The only negatives, I guess, for a Standard Bank is the Liberty acquisition. I think that has held it a little bit back this year, but should work through the system next year. And, you know, a Nedbank obviously has got a smaller retail exposure, so more corporate. And there were some stages that were concerned that corporate SA might be under pressure. But I think we've seen the company results has come out over the course of the year. The corporate SA has actually gone quite well. So we think Nedbank as a result is also well positioned going into the next 12 to 24 months.
We'll leave it there. That's Alex Dace, Chief Investment Officer in Thombo Wealth. Alex, always appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mohammed Nala from monos.com. And of course, you find him on the Twitters as well, Mohammed Nala. Mohammed, appreciate the time. One of the events from the pandemic, which I think back in March last year, certainly I wasn't anticipating it. And then we kept on thinking it would eventually resolve itself. It hasn't. Is supply chain snarl-ups just left, right, and center? I mean, from, you know, Ever Given getting caught in the Panama Canal to chip shortages, heck, lorry driver shortages in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely, Simon. Always a pleasure talking to you and to your listeners. Supply chain, I mean, it's been one of the most topical points. If you have a look at, for example, S&P earnings releases over the course of the last quarter, yeah, you know, it was, I think, a record number of CEOs citing supply chain and inflation, both of which are actually intrinsically linked factors at this point in time. So I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that we had the Ever Given, you know, blocking the Suez Canal a couple of months ago. But I don't think that was really the pressure point. I think that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Throw that in with a global pandemic and the labor issues you've mentioned, and you've ended up with a fairly toxic mix that has led to a lot of business leaders questioning how we go about doing business over the course of the next couple of years.
And that was the point I was coming to. I mean, we kind of perfected the just-in-time supply chain. And, you know, perhaps most famously, Tim Cook at Apple when he was the COO and getting, you know, 100 million iPhones into people's hands every quarter. And this has been a major snarl-up. Do we come out the other side of the pandemic and start to say, hang on a bit, maybe a little more localized manufacturing, maybe a little bit more inventory stock rather than just in time?
I think so, Simon. I mean, just in fact, last week, we were talking to the CEO of DHL Eastern Europe, who happens to be another South African living abroad on my show, Magic Markets. And again, you know, listeners can go and check that out at magic-markets.com. But the point he's been trying to highlight for us is that greater regionalization is firmly on the cards of a lot of the people that they're speaking to as well. And if you have a look at, for example, some of the companies out there, like I said, that have released results, it's not just greater regionalization, but the fact of the matter, Simon, is that over the course of the last several decades, the international logistics industry, supply chain in general, has been optimized for one thing and one thing alone, and that was for price. It was to bring the lowest possible price into the value chain so that goods could move seamlessly and cheaply around the world. And that's changed because you can optimize for price or you can optimize for resilience. And we haven't optimized for resilience. So it depends on how far this pendulum swings in the other direction. And naturally, there's a trade-off there, which will filter through into arguably higher prices, but possibly greater regionalization.
And I mean, higher prices in of itself is a whole debate. And of course, there's the current inflation we're seeing in the US, which is, you know, the transitory word has proven to be quite transitory in itself. But localization is not a bad thing. I mean, you know, America certainly hasn't been producing many chips. And in South Africa, there's a lot of things that we could benefit as an economy by that localization.
I think so. So I think there are two aspects to think of right there, right? Mm. The one is, this becomes a national security issue. So if you go back, Simon, even before this recent flare-up in terms of supply chain challenges, a few years ago, I remember reading articles about rare earth metals and yep. how these become pressure points when you're looking at it with a geopolitical lens on. So I think governments are at pains to try and bring regionalization back in to protect jobs. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is also that some industries have long lead times, but others don't. So I'll cast your mind back to a few months ago when we had lumber prices pushing through the roof. And if your lead time to new production is fairly short, those prices correct very quickly. Other commodities, for example, if you're looking at copper, some of the metals, the stuff that's going to go into electronic EVs, electric vehicles, those have much longer lead times. And so there's a stickiness factor in terms of prices. The last component to look at is, ironically, when the Fed says it's transitory is when you believe it's not. And as soon as they say transitory is done, that's probably when inflation is going to start coming off. So I'm not entirely landed on the fact that I don't think it's as simple. I think they're going to be different sectors that give us different price stickiness. And that will translate very differently in terms of the inflation that is felt by consumers on the ground.
I got you on that, and particularly on the Fed point. If we look at localization, I think a lot of folks would think, oh, China's going to be a loser. But truthfully, China's no longer been the cheap factory of the world. It's moved to other parts of Asia, Vietnam, and the like. Is China perhaps in a part, perhaps a bit of a winner because of their command economy? For example, let's look at silicon chips. They can kind of say, we need a factory built here, and it's probably going to happen a lot quicker than anyone else.
I mean, Simon, I've not been a China bear, and I think this year has been a very costly, that's been a costly view to have this year. I think China is arguably, as you say, a winner in the regionalization debate, because if you look at that Asian nexus, the simple fact is a third of the world's population exists between China and India. Mm. So that's massive. And so there's enough demand just domestically for China to keep on going. There's another point that I'd like to raise here. And that is the fact that, ironically, this almost serves China at the current juncture, because as you correctly say, they have not been the low-cost producer for some time. China is actively trying to reorientate its economy towards cleaner production, more technology, and so forth. And so this might actually come at a very opportune time for China.
I think so. And I take your point of not being a China bear. In fact, we've had some conversations around China, yourself and I. What about, I mean, part of this obviously is just the pandemic. It's, you know, someone somewhere gets COVID at a port and a port shuts down for a week. Is any of it attributable to the demand increase? You know, suddenly we all needed a new iPad or a new computer or whatever it was. And we saw sales via Amazon and others spiking through the roof. Or would that under normal circumstances have been easy enough to manage?
So I think a fair amount of it is pandemic related, in that you had factories stopping production at the worst points of the COVID pandemic. Mm-hmm. And remember that even in, for example, geographies like the United States, there were large stimulus checks that were mailed to people, which arguably provided a disincentive for a lot of people to get back into the workforce. So that's meant that this has had a longer tail in terms of ramping up production. And then the other thing to bear in mind is that once inventories are run down, remember, a lot of businesses have been running with inventories. Those were run down over the pandemic. So they were able to supply some of that demand. And now that that's gone, you turn an economy that's arguably recovering in the rest of the world back on again. People are sitting with larger cash balances, maybe because of stimulus or whatever it may be. They want to spend that money. There's also the pent-up demand of, you have to replace a car, for example, every now and then, or maybe your laptop is obsolete. And so I think it's a combination of those factors that all kind of come together right now. That's why I say it's supply chain, yes, but it's labor potentially. And all of those are also linked to the pressure points that were created because of the pandemic and the lockdowns.
And I imagine also some management simply hoarding. Like you only need 1,000 chips, but you're worried, so you order 3,000, and then 2,000 arrive, and now you've actually got extra capacity, which under normal circumstances you wouldn't have done at all.
In all honesty, I mean, that's not something that I've seen. I think if you look at a lot of the companies, what they've been saying is they really cannot get their hands on enough, let's call it widgets, to produce and actually take care of their own production. So I'll give you an example. Again, in Magic Markets Premium, we looked at a stock like Monster Energy Drinks.
Yeah.
And they bought enough aluminum to get them cans so that they can provide. But they, at this point in time, are struggling to satisfy their natural organic demand. You're seeing the same thing, for example, at Ford Motor Company. So I don't think hoarding is really the thing. I just think there is shortage much further up the value chain and arguably in commodities that have much longer tails from investment to supply. And that ties back to a point that I know we've discussed before, Simon, yourself and I, is that commodities, for example, this is why commodities are such cyclical industries, is that you don't just turn on a mine tomorrow and, hey, you've got metal coming out. So ironically, you're investing at a time when, you know, the cycle's peaking. And by the time that production comes on stream, arguably it's swinging around and demand is kind of being satisfied. And that's why you get whipsawed around in that particular industry. I think right now we're at the point where supply is very deficient. Demand, maybe it's running on par. Maybe it's running a little bit ahead because some economies globally are running hot. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what's been pushing prices in specific sectors.
And as an aside to listeners, go have a look at that Monster Energy drink graph. It's an astounding business. And go sign up and have a read of that article. Last question then is when does this start to clear? I've been chatting with a lot of the PGM miners. I've been chatting with some local motor factoring companies, Combined Motor Holdings, Motors. And the answer's been in 6 months, but that answer's now a year and a half old. Most recently, Theresa was saying maybe by the end of next year. I mean, is this something which sort of resolves itself next year, or is it perhaps going to take a little more time, particularly if we need to start building that localization, which will take time?
I think to solve this problem, to reorientate a global supply chain from a price efficiency perspective to a resilience perspective, this is a multi-year trend. It ties in with national imperatives like the infrastructure bill in the US, for example. And so I think when businesses say this steadies itself in the next 6 months, that's really to buy you one or two reporting quarters. And at that point in time, you just push it out a little bit.
Yeah.
It's going to be a multi-speed recovery, Simon. It does depend on which industry, what your commodity pressure points are. But I do think it's probably going to be with us for the next couple of quarters at least.
Yeah, I take your point on that. And it's going to be multi-speed. Some places will free up sooner than others. We'll leave it there. Mohammed Nala, monos.com. Always appreciate the time.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
That's it for today. In fact, that is it for the year. We are done. We will be back on Monday, 10 Jan, back to normal live shows and podcasts just after 7. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabuchli, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again next year.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.